Because that's the problem with ground loss. It's not that you're having ground current traveling across country. It's that it's ultimately being turned into thermal waste heat, where it's the energy is dissipated again because all energy is conserved, but it's not going to create RF fields that radiate from your soil.
So you're saying that the purpose of radials really is to act as like a ground shunt rather than a ground transmission.
Yes, which is why you'd far less of them if you elevate it above the ground.
Okay, I understand. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. That was the question tonight.
Depending on this, I don't know what the subject is for tonight, but yeah, that was just my question that I had. Thank you.
Okay, we usually never have a question of the week. I kind of prefer to leave it open-ended, so if anyone has anything that they want to throw, they can. So we don't have a kind of theme for these technical nets. Dick didn't either. He just sat there and asked people if they had any questions. Worked for him. Okay, I guess
trying to go ahead and just ascertain, if you have an off-center fed antenna, basically the wire to the transformer is one thing, but from the transformer to the common mode choke, that's going to act as a radiator, isn't it?
From the ballon to the choke, it's going to have some common mode. It might be not a lot, but it might be. And yeah, you will have some common mode current between the ballon and the RF choke.
Now, does a dipole have that?
It can under some circumstances. Center-fed dipoles are very weird in that it sort of depends upon the length of the transmission line, whether it induces some common mode reflections or not. So, you could have a 10-meter center-fed dipole with a transmission line that's X length, and you don't have a choke, and you have common mode problems, and no interactions in your shack, and your friend could have the same exact center-fed dipole with a longer transmission line, and he may have to put up a choke because in his case he gets common mode reflected currents getting back into his shack. So it's dependent upon the length in wavelength from your center fed dipole, balanced dipole to your transmitter.
All right, for example, I have 30 feet of coax from my transformer. I have an end-fed antenna, random wire end-fed at the moment. And I'm going approximately 30 feet of LMR 400 into my shack where I have a common mode filter. And then the rest is 72 feet out to a tree, at least so far. I'm going to be reworking that whole thing. But the question is, how come I have, higher SWR? Is it because it's just unbalanced?
No, you could have a resonant antenna that's unbalanced, and you could have a non-resonant antenna that's balanced. The SWR is based upon the impedance at the frequency that you're using. And depending upon the type of antenna and, if necessary, impedance transforming balance, if they're not working right, you have a off if you have a different impedance than you should for your transmitter, and at these interfaces between a 50-ohm coax cable and your antenna that's not operating at 50 ohms, you have reflection. Some of those being common mode and all kinds of things. So it's not inherently due to ballast. It's due to resonance. You have to have everything designed to be resonant at the frequency you're using, and you have to make sure that if you're tapping off-center, that you are correcting the impedance mismatch through some kind of ballast. Again, at the center of a dipole is the lowest impedance. So you shouldn't need anything more than a one-to-one balanced transformer. Off-center, you'll get into places where it'll go up to, say, 200 ohms. So a 4-to-1 would work best for you. For an NFED, it ends up going to about 3,000 ohms of impedance. That's when you have to start to use these 49-to-1 and such in order to get it somewhere down towards 50 ohms for the 50-ohm transmission line that you're using to get the power back and forth.
Makes total sense. So basically, it's not a balun on an NFED antenna. It's really an unun.
Yes. It's unbalanced to unbalanced. In the case of the NFED is an unbalanced antenna, and the coaxial cable is an unbalanced transmission line.
Okay, thank you so much for the explanation. I always appreciate it, and I turn it back over to you.
Okay, you're welcome as always, Brian. We appreciate your participation in this net. Wesley, I think your turn.
Okay. It's Wesley. The first opportunity is SD SAT-1 spacecraft for hams. Actually, it's for hams, too. Because ham radio operators, they have radios, and they could take advantage of it. I was going to give you just one line, and I would appreciate if Paul, as you, if you had a time, of course, to read the email, because I sent it today at 4, after 4 p.m., comment on it. So, amateur radio astronomers, the retransmitter data will be available to amateur radio astronomers around the globe who can receive and encrypt those encrypted signals VHF, and the encryption algorithm will be available for public, so you could use it. Maybe first to you and then eventually to Paul for comments. Back to you.
Yeah, I really didn't have a lot of free time this weekend with Passover and all, so, and I thought that if anyone had any kind of useful information, it would be Paul. I don't particularly study satellites that much.
Paul, are you there?
Yeah, QSL. Hi, how you doing, Wes?
Yeah, did you have a chance to read my email from today, SDM SAT-1?
I looked through about three-quarters of the one with the guy that was buying Buzz Aldrin's jet. Back to you.
Okay, I was in hope that you may give some comment on it.
I've been kind of busy, but I will definitely review it, and I'll let you know next week. Wes, back to you.
Okay, so the information about it is that there was a number of scientific institutions that work on it. It's the first ever satellite for VLF, very low frequency. and it's not launched yet, but expect it to be launched 2025. Hold on. Okay. The launcher is via space. The entity name is Aden State University. There are two entities. One is American, one is Italian, that is working on it. And is built for academic education in the U.S. and around the world. So it collects and stores frequency, low frequency or very low frequency signals, normally blocked by the air atmosphere. And data will be retransmitted by very high frequency VHF signals to ground stations and analysis. The retransmitted data will also be available to amateur radio astronomers around the globe who can receive the encrypted VHF signals. So you could take the advantage of it. The CubeSat will be carried in low Earth orbit by via space aboard its Dauntless orbiter launch vehicle as a rideshare option powered by the Star 3D hybrid propulsion system. Actually, I have the explanation for you also in, later on for the acoustic part of the propulsion system that you have asked for before. So if there are no other things to say about it, I'm going to go to another one, but let me make a pause. Okay. The best friendly laugh is at the end of the video. Worth your time, Roy and Paul. I'm not sure if Roy and Paul, you had the time to watch it. It was the video that was titled, I bought NASA private jet for $41,000. And I attached the link to the YouTube. So again, the title is, I bought a NASA private jet for $41,000. So I have watched the guy for years. It's a pilot enthusiast, really honest person, presenting his honest emotions. And I decided to bring that subject to the technique because we are enthusiasts. We have a real emotion. We spend a lot of money for something that is our hobby. And we are so proud of being able to buy something like I want to have ICOM 7760. 66, yeah. And but it's like 5,000 and change. I had the money, I could spend, but it's like how much you can spend for a hobby. But anyhow, let me drop. Okay, and I found some information about the guy. I have his real name and whatsoever, but I'm not going to mention it. It's we love his channel. He works seriously hard on his channel. He's funny but serious too. He is super business-minded. He's very passionate about aviation. So he actually is crazy about everything that flies. And he's not wealthy. He's just a normal guy, hardworking for his money. And then I thought it's going to be just laugh because I'm going to mention it, people going to go to that video, and I can promise you there would be not single one of you who wouldn't laugh and have a friendly laugh. So again, the title is I Bought NASA Private Jet for $41,000, and this is by Jimmy Swart. So the channel is Jimmy Swart. But I didn't accept till just before the TechNet that I have to make a legal comment on it, because the story is much more interesting or much more complicated than we could think about it. So we have a guy who didn't have money. He said, I'm going to bid only 40 $12,500 maximum on the jet. But then that was the jet who was owned by astronaut and another guy. And wow, it is something, and it flies so fast and whatsoever. It's almost the sound speed and whatsoever. And he mentioned that jet was confiscated because of somebody improper use of it. And now I have to make a legal statement, so the information acquired may not be correct. Was found on the internet, and I take no responsibility for correctness. But it's shocking. It is shocking. So it might be wrong. That is there. I found it. Okay. So a person who owe that, it looks like from the information on the internet, was Buzz Aldrin. An astronaut, and he abandoned private jet that was sold for $41,000. In another context, the New York Attorney General at Letitia James' office spent $41,807 in taxpayer funds on that, I'm not sure it's that, but it says in there, on private jet travel over a 13-month period. Additionally, NASA shut down computers for 21 days to determine the extent of attack at cost of $41,000. And then there was another information that I found, as I say, in my legal note, is might not be correct. So it is just mentioned that I found information that might be totally false. A tech billionaire, Buzz Aldrin, abandoned private jet for $41,000. The same tech billionaire also conducted the first private space walk to lead NASA. Another tech billionaire founded Draken International, which had the world's largest fleet of private fighter aircraft. So now we kind of know what kind of astronaut we were dealing with it. And then another information found on the internet is billionaire who performed the first private spacewalk is Trump pick to lead NASA. And it says, President-elect Donald Trump on Wednesday nominated tech billionaire whatsoever. The rest of it you can find it, who was that. So now that the jet that was abandoned because a company didn't want to pay the fines went to the auction. And that guy couldn't stand, and if you look at that video, if he sees emotion, if you see his face at the end of it, that was he was like begging $41,000, please somebody overbeat me, please. I mean, people, you are crazy. You're spending so much money for the junk. So we're talking about the guy who actually ended up being the owner of it. And he said, I'm never gonna recover financially from it. But anyhow, Dr. Roy and Paul. Did you happen to have a chance to look at that video or have any comment? Back to you, Dr. Roy.
AC2GS. Yeah, I kind of fast-forwarded through the middle where he was doing the inspections on the field and kibitzing and talking to everyone. It was kind of sad. We've all sort of been in the middle of an auction where we got a little bit too emotional, and hopefully we all kind of dealt with it at the time, as opposed to this guy kind of just was on autopilot. And as he was losing money, he was telling people in the video that it's a pile of junk and it's not worth any of the money, and he really wishes someone would out-auction him. But I got a feeling that they did. He would simply put down a bigger number. because I don't know, something strange is going on with him, but it was kind of sad to me. It wasn't particularly funny. It was some guy wasting his money on something that wasn't worth it.
Thank you very much. Paul, did you see the video? Do you have a comment?
I never got to the last 10 minutes. But I don't know, it was kind of creepy with him going through all the drawers and everything. I felt like the guy was like robbing somebody's house, you know? Very strange feeling watching that. But, no, I didn't get to the last 10 minutes. And, yeah, it's Buzz Aldrin, supposed to be Buzz Aldrin's jet, that's what he claimed. But, I don't know, what are you going to do? So you're saying did he wind up actually buying this jet and take it home? I mean, it looked like nothing worked when he was pushing all the buttons.
Yeah, well, the buttons were dead into accident. That means that he couldn't activate anything, but having a jet of astronaut, I mean, astronaut. Okay, anyhow. I'm not going to comment on it. so much was around that. And I had no idea just before the technet how much is around that. And why that jet was on the auction. But just keep all of the video, go to the last 10 minutes, and look at the guy's face. I mean, he was... almost crying that he bought it, and then there was a number of few hundreds of comments below the video frame, and everybody was like sympathizing with him, wishing he loved him luck whatsoever. One guy who was also professional, he said that the level of noise for that jet might be too high, and the jet may not fly again because it's not going to pass the FAA regulation, but it's not sure about it. And then the other guy said that $77,000 is going to be only cost of inspection, and probably the jet is going to need like $200,000 of parts on it. So it was I went outside the house and I was laughing, but like laughing with friendly feeling. It was like laughing from something or somebody. Dr. Ray.
I don't know what you want me to respond to. I kind of already told you my take. It's kind of a guy who let the auction get out from under him, which is kind of a sad thing, but I don't know. My sense of humor, I guess, is different. I didn't have any kind of chuckling when the guy flushed $41,000 down the drain.
Yeah, actually, he said that it was $41,000, but $8,000 was the commission of the auction. Auctioning company, so it's like $50,000. Well, we'll see. there was a. So again, the title of the video is "I Bought NASA Private Jet for $41,000," and the channel name is Jimmy's World. Jimmy's World. Okay, I'm gonna go to the next one. We beat the bushes on it. Okay, launching from the moon with silicon-based rocket fuel and other ideas. I also hope that it's a deep space question. I also hope that Paul had a chance to look at that email as well. If not, then I'm going to comment on it. With your permission, Dr. Roy, Paul, do you have a comment?
Now, like I said before, I was kind of busy this week, so I didn't get a chance to watch that. The only thing I got through most of was the one with the guy that bought the jet. So, by the way, you commented about Jarek Isaacman before. He's not yet NASA administrator. He has not yet been confirmed. So he's the guy. He's got a bunch of private fighter jets, and he's a billionaire, and he's one of Elon Musk's friends. Flew on two flights, nothing to do with NASA. They were all independent flights with SpaceX that Isaacman had paid for. Anyway, back to you, Wes. I wanted to make that statement before.
Okay. So, there is a problem in the moon and in other planets to have a fuel. And there was a number of scientific articles. One of them was making rocket fuel from moon rocks, silicon, liquid oxygen, as a hybrid propellant. And I wouldn't really pay attention too much to it, but then I look at the document type and authors of it, and I was, wow! Like a big wow. So authors of the article was Kennedy Space Center, Merritt Island, Florida. The number of them, there was Ryan Gold, Shala Peak, Joel Olson. Then there was the Florida Institute of Technology, Melbourne in the United States, Bennett Aerospace, Tracy Gibson, and Engineering Research and Consulting, Merritt Island, Florida. There was Nip Azim and Kennedy Space Center, Griffin, Lund, and a few others, Virginia's Tech, and York University, what else, Bennett Aerospace, another person. So then I was like, wow, too many of big shots there. So what is it about? Hold on. The research explored the controlled preservation of burning of lunar soil constituents and in oxygen combustion vessel for use as an in-space resource technologies such as carbothermal reduction and molten regolith electrolysis, and being developed to remove oxygen from use of the liver constituent in enriched state. So in other words, is you're taking a sand and you're trying to use that sand with as the propeller with the atmosphere of liquid oxygen, but then you have to have enough of liquid oxygen in the tanks to use it from the moon. The much easier was another one, which is called ALICE propellant. And it's aluminum ice rocket propellant, ALICE. And it's a rocket propellant that consists of frozen mixture of nano aluminum powder and water. So we have water on the moon. Aluminum powder we can take with us, and aluminum has stronger affinity for oxygen than most of elements, which is most visible in aluminothermic reactions such as thermite. Probably many of you will remember thermite, and I'm not going to try to go to 9/11 story whatsoever, and controversy with some scientists, PhD, that were taking a peek on it. But this allows aluminium to burn with large release of heat in substances they are normally considered to be inert, such as carbon dioxide and water. have aluminium combustion is normally hindered by presence of durable oxide layer that forms on a surface of aluminium. So that would be the few cents that I could keep for myself. I believe that Paul may have a time later on in the week and in the next TechNet to tell us more. Let me drop. And the next one is Beta Whistleblower, shocking testimony. RACS U.S. Senate ex-executive Meta worked with China. So I said to Du Bois, and I left that subject to the decision of Roy, and I wanted, I would be really happy if Roy would refer that shocking revelation to the audience as this is AI, artificial intelligence. $18 billion. $18 billion of our money just given to it's not, I mean, just to write. Do you wanna talk about it?
Well, I mean, I'll be part of a conversation. I don't remember the talk about us giving Facebook billions of dollars for artificial intelligence. Social networks are evil things. They are designed to attract people and keep their eyeballs glued to the pages. And they do that by enforcing dopamine surges of fear and anxiety. They don't calm anyone down. They do the very opposite. So, I mean, you know, I would love to see social networks shut down, especially I wouldn't have to see some of these guys who run the thing. But, I mean, that's part of the game. Hopefully most people realize the game that's being played. They will do anything to keep your eyes in front of your computer screen, and that usually means not so good things. I believe there was some race riot in Myanmar a couple of years ago that Facebook was very important in setting fire to. These guys need to be extremely regulated or shut down. You know, we could use the power doing something more useful than upsetting a bunch of middle-aged people.
So we have a Meta whistleblower that claims tech giant built $18 billion business by aiding China in AI race and undermining U.S. national security. And that's official. The lady who was a high-profile representative of that structure testified in front of U.S. Senate. And the video is named, but when you go to that video, you might find just a short video that says about her preamble, if I can say, name it this way. And the second one that would give you the whole story is 1 hour, 24 minutes, and the title is Meta Whistleblower Shocking Testimony Rocks U.S. Senate. Ex-executive Meta work with China. And that was three days ago. Now, from the other information officially, former Facebook executive Sarah Wynn Williams testified before the Senate Judiciary Commission Committee Wednesday, accusing the social media company of undermining national security and briefing China and U.S. artificial intelligence effort in order to grow the business there. From that, what I understood is that, let's say Company A, that was the company that we're talking about. Company A stated, we're not really taking our prop property or intellectual property, or we're not really trying to sell to the Chinese or give it to Chinese, but at the same time, $11 billion were made. Of course, I could understand that improperly. I'm trying to be cautious with words. But it says, we're engaged in high-stake AI arms race against China. And during my time at Meta, that's what she said, company executive lied about what they were doing with Chinese Communist Party to employees, shareholders, Congress, and American public. William said in her prepared testimony. So if we didn't have the revelation about AI, and we think that we have a really American feeling. We are Americans. I'm American. I feel American. I'm thankful to this country that I'm in here. At the same time, some people decide to trade America. Am I right or wrong, Dr. Roy?
I don't want to make a blanket statement. I mean, unfortunately, artificial intelligence, I don't think, is legally blocked as a security issue. The Chinese have a growing field of AI. I mean, we talked about DeepSeek here before. Unfortunately, American AI is not morally that pure. A lot of the intellectual property was basically lifted without permission all over the internet, and a lot of people are going to be filing copyright infringement rules on American companies. They're not going to probably do it too much on Chinese companies, because Chinese companies don't respect intellectual property anyway. And there's a lot of merchandise that American companies, they moved their factories to China, and China immediately started stealing their intellectual property and cloning their devices and destroying their companies. There's a whole bunch of companies that basically collapsed in on itself because China stole all of its IP and cloned it for a lot less money. So, I mean, unfortunately, this is the present time. There's a lot of reasons to dislike and be suspicious of Facebook. Yours is only one. But, you know, there's dozens and dozens of other good reasons. So, I don't know.
Okay, thanks. So, my question is, we had a hearing. She was testifying in front of a committee. And what is next? Is it going to be any next, or is it not going to be any next? Does it depend on the constitutional body that we have, or it depends from one person who may not really try to go after that? Dr. Roy.
Yeah, billionaires get away with murder, literally. So, no, nothing's going to happen. Absolutely, positively, nothing.
Okay. So the next one, how EUV mirrors are made from history perspective as it applies to Hubble and Webb telescopes. There are two different concepts of it, and when I sent the email, I said I'm not sure if this complex story of mirrors in the video is not too complicated for the TechNet, but you both decide whether to give it a try. So, as I've heard, Paul didn't have much time, but I believe that Paul has can recall from his memory some information about that optics of Hubble and Webb and the problems that were with Hubble before. So, microphone to you, Dr. Roy, first, and then you decide you can give it to Paul. Back to you.
Yeah, AC2GS. Well, I don't know in what way you want us to go into this. Do you want to have someone explain how those tight Cassegrain telescopes are built and work? You want someone to discuss that the lens elements were basically frames of beryllium, which are very dimensionally stable, especially in cold temperatures, and then was given a gold coating to properly reflect the infrared emissions. I'm not quite sure what aspect of this interests you.
I mean, any aspect you decide is sufficient for it. Maybe Paul can make some comments.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the question is about the Hubble. You know, you want to go back to the mirror, how it was faultily designed and whose fault that was. I mean, we've covered that a number of times on the net, Wes, so I'm not sure what the question is.
Yeah, so I'm gonna read that what I included in the email. So Webb is known for iconic hexagonally segmented golden primary mirror, but there are three other mirrors in Webb optics that all function together to bring light to Webb instruments. The 18 hexagonal primary mirror segments are precisely aligned to act as one large concave primary mirror, which first gathers light and focuses into the round convex secondary mirror that lies at the end of the web along folding bumps. The secondary mirror reflects the light back to the concave regular tertiary mirror, which reflects it to the flat fine steering mirror from which the light travels into the web instrument. But this one is quite opposite from the concept that was used in Hubble. And you can start from how the Hubble... Well, actually, I specified the questions, for Paul. Why did NASA switch from ultraviolet to infrared? That was the first question. And the second question is, can you present to the DECNAT how Hubble mirrors were repaired? Back to you, Paul.
Okay. I thought the whole thing was about Hubble. Yeah, you're talking about the James Webb Space Telescope. And how it was repaired, that was a system called COSTAR. COSTAR was... with the shuttle brought up with the on the first repair mission to fix the mirror. They couldn't change the mirror, but they could change the optics with inside, you know, where it gets all reflected. And it had this whole setup called COSTAR, and that's an acronym for something. And if you put COSTAR Hubble into Wikipedia, you know, you're going to get all the details about that unit that they brought up on that mission. And yeah, Webb, we covered that step by step as that went up to that 1 million mile location away from the Earth at the L2 location, Lagrange point 2. And yeah, it had the whole frame is, like Roy said, made of beryllium, which is really good for any kind of heat or cooling. It will not move. There's virtually no change in the structure when it's heated or cooled. So that's why they use beryllium. They don't want anything to affect the mirrors. And yeah, there were 18 segments. Let me drop it. Each one was roughly a meter in size. They were hexagonal shaped 18 pieces. Middle, in the middle was missing. You know, that's where the light would go through. So all the light would bounce off the 18 mirrors and go to the secondary mirror, which is, you know, set out in front of it. And that secondary mirror is set through the center of the telescope to a tertiary mirror, and that in turn sends it to a cooling block, which had the CCD, the charge coupled device on it, and that thing, it had an active refrigeration system to keep it really cold. They got it down to certain degree Kelvin, and they wanted to even go further, which they did. Let me drop it. Which brings you back to the original question of the infrared. Infrared, they wanted to look at the beginning of the universe as far as they can. And since the beginning of the universe, the space has been stretching. So the original light that came from the original galaxies and all have expanded, you know, to the point where all these billions of years later, 14.8 billion years later, the light is stretched to a point where if you had a regular mirror or ultraviolet mirror, you see that light because that's, the wavelengths have stretched into the infrared, actually into the near-infrared as well. So that's why they use that for James Webb Space Telescope. I should save this for the space portion of the net anyway. Sorry about that, Roy. Back to you. WS2N.
It's fine, Paul. It's okay to bleed into each other.
Okay, very good, Roy. Over to you, Wes.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Roy, and thank you, Paul. We got the answer. The only thing is how come the Hubble wasn't able to go as low as infrared bandwidth and to exceed?
Didn't have the cooling capabilities, number one. You know, you have to really go down to those low temperatures. Don't forget, Hubble is in a 350-mile high orbit around the Earth. Essentially, it's like a low orbiting, so it's constantly receiving a little heat here and a little heat there. It's orbiting the Earth every 90 minutes. You can't get down to those cryogenic temperatures. That's why James Webb Space Telescope is all the way out a million miles away from here at the L2 position, because you're not going to have the constant heating of the spacecraft. It's far, far away from going around the Earth every 90 minutes. You're not going to have that kind of a problem. But what they did do is they put a sun shield on James Webb Space Telescope as big as a tennis court, which is another story in itself. You could probably kill a whole net on that topic, on that sun shield. But it was big enough to keep any kind of light from the sun or from the Earth. And, of course, the moon reflecting over toward the James Webb Space Telescope, keeping it, I forget what the cryogenic temperature was, but way down there, you know, probably in the 4 to 5 degrees, I guess, something like that. Anyway, back to you, Wes.
Actually, I have in my lab a crazy cooler that goes to 2.8 Kelvin. Yeah, it was made for the purpose of testing some of the electronics that was later on to be sent to space. I've got it from the auction. So I have it. Very interesting device. Now, the another subject that I had, I'm going to skip it. It's a weird guy's explained, but it was a comedy time. So I was thinking about how clever, how could I have, an interesting discussion if I create something like a comedy that would be in funny form. It would be humoristic attempt to explain waveguides leading to novel form of communications for ham, but at the same time, it would be something like a comedy. But then I spoke to my wife, and she looked at the text, and she said, "You know what? Remember the old times when we were in communist regime? There was a say that if the person is completely innocent and completely clear and completely not going to be found guilty of anything or whatsoever, just there was a say, give me the person, I find something on it. If I don't find it, I just manufacture something and make him guilty." So she looked at the text and she said that a text might be a little bit touchy, and we don't have any longer time in the United States of America where the freedom of speech is as it was before. So I'm going to skip it. Let me jump. Okay. I might rephrase that and take it as educational material eventually, because as I say, if you have an antenna and it's a vertical dipole, then if you take the transmission pattern of that antenna, it's 360 degrees, and 1 degree has only one of 360 of the power of the vertical dipole. If you have a Yagi antenna, it's much better directionally. And if you have a waveguide, you actually have a 100% of your power. At least you can choose. I'm not saying that you're going to have it. You're going to choose the 100% of the power to go in one direction. And one of the examples is the fiber optic, when the loss per mile, actually per kilometer, which is a little bit shorter than a mile, is 1 dB. So, depends from the quality. Could have a 2 dB, 3 dB, but usually 1 dB for the good quality one. And we have internet over around the world just because of the ability to send energy. One is the
NASA LDW Top 8 challenged by China, moving parts of thermal Sterling engine. I'm not sure if we both had a chance to go to the...
Before I was asked, Paul asked me about the acoustic or thermoacoustic engine, and I was trying to look closer to it in hope that Paul is going to comment on it. So, November 12, 2023, NASA Glenn's thermoacoustic power converter reshaped the conventional Stirling engine from toroidal shape into the straight collinear arrangement. In other words, we know that Stirling engines operate on
but now with the drivers, they're going to be aggressive. So you just have to go to a very big place to the right one to come down to the right.
Not particularly. By the way, your amplitude is all over the place. There are times where you're at least 25 dB below where you should be. So I could just barely make you out some follow of the conversation. Yeah, you were making a comment a couple of weeks ago about how sound is either created or used to generate power. And Paul asked you about that, and you know, you didn't tell him about this thermoacoustic Stirling. But as about, so I'm not quite sure. Is it generating noise, or is it using noise as the energy source? And where is it getting the noise from if it is using it as an energy source?
Yeah, this is an interesting subject. Hold on, let's first put this down. Okay. So, if we have a sound, that sound, and we suspend some of the material in the sound that has a resonant point at a certain point, there is a resonant area, we would have a form that is suspended in it. So in other words, if you have a piston, you can actually make the piston vibrate from the sound of given frequency. And it happened that China took advantage of it and decided to go with their own. So, innovation of NASA at Glenn Research Center have developed two novel technologies that make Stirling engine more efficient and less costly. So, first, Glenn's thermoacoustic power converter uses sound to turn heat into electric power. And then, utilizing heat-driven pressure and volume oscillation from thermoacoustic sources to power piezoelectric alternators, or other power converter technologies. So the device can create electricity with unprecedented efficiencies, but also it could use that Stirling engines to power some propulsion systems, not exactly use it just for creating electricity. But that was a few words that I was trying to say about it. Now, from the other link is, I sent you an email, China makes breakthrough thermoacoustic Stirling generator, and that was talking about Stirling generator, the prototype delivered 102 kilowatts of power from heat source of 530 degrees Celsius, which is 986 Fahrenheit, quite of high. From the picture that engine looks like partially made from aluminum, but probably stainless steel, if you could look at it. So the first time this type of breakthrough generator has gone to 100 kilowatts. Before, Americans didn't even go to it. So thermoacoustic engine achieves a high thermal to electric efficiencies with no moving parts. So it was like a puzzle. Okay, no moving parts. I mean, the article wasn't really made by a scientific entity or scientific journal. There is no such thing like no moving part. You have something moving, a piston moving, or something moving in that in order to create a conversion from mechanical friction or from mechanical movement to the electrical movement. Do you have any...
Okay, I mean, we've talked about things like this in the past. Thermal couples are not mechanical.
They take differential heat. You can't extract energy from just a heat source. There's a heat difference, and the difference between one area's heat and the other area's heat is what gives you the ability to extract energy. If you just had a big environment that was 1,000 degrees, you couldn't extract any energy unless you had some external environment that was a lower temperature. So it's temperature differential that allows for the extraction of energy from the system, not just everything is hot.